Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bob Elson. We're set as usual for our Sunday morning show. And remember, the Cubs are playing the final game at Wrigley Field today with the San Francisco Giants, who are having their problems here of late. They were red hot at the beginning of the season, and now they've gone into a tailspin. So that final game will be seen today, and the White Sox will be winding up their series in New York. As you know, the NBA final, the champion is Seattle. They beat Washington at Washington and did it decisively so that they are the champs. But whatever you do, there are a lot of things to listen to in sports today, on a lot of baseball on radio and on television, so that you have your choice. We're going to talk about racing today with an old friend of ours, one of the prominent figures in harness racing in America, Sid Anton, the man who makes Maywood Park go round and round, and it's a beautiful place where they really have some wonderful programs. So we'll be talking about racing with Sid Anton, and he'll be our guest in just about 1 minute. Well, a prominent figure in harness racing is our guest today, Sid Anton of Maywood Park. Actually, you participated, too, in the other type of racing.
Yes, I did, Bob. When I started out, I was involved in thoroughbred racing at Detroit Racecourse. And then, of course, I started working for both thoroughbred and harness racing, and ultimately my attention was directed at the harness racing scene, and I love it.
Yes. When I was with the White Sox and we go to Detroit, we usually had night games, and a lot of the players, Al Lopez and the coaches, we'd go out to that track.
Well, it's a beautiful facility out there. I think most people enjoyed it when they came out, and racing has changed quite a bit since then, about 20, 25 years ago. The attendance is up considerably. I don't think the plants are as beautiful as they were, the landscaping, and it was just wonderful to go out there in the afternoon and see the horses race, and it just seems more like a business now. It doesn't seem to be as much fun to me as it used to be then.
Have you ever spent a week at Saratoga?
No, I haven't.
They say that's something everybody should do.
They say it's just the most relaxing thing you've ever done in your life.
Yeah, and it's beautiful there.
Oh, it is. It's gorgeous. It's the same. It's a takeoff on Belmont, I guess, and Hialeah and those places where they're just gorgeous grounds, well manicured, and just fun to be at.
And last year at Saratoga, they had all the great horses there. Aladar, Affirm was there.
Oh, yeah.
Seattle Slough.
They're great. When you see those horses, you know they're champions just looking at them.
I know that one of your interests as a man dedicated and devoted to horse racing is the problem of security. How much of an investment is it, and how do you go about it?
Well, Bob, that's a big problem for everybody. I would say that right now we're probably spending $5,000 or $6,000 per day on security problems, various security measures. And one of the biggest problems, of course, is security for the horses, to make sure that no unauthorized persons are in there, that racing is, and the integrity of racing is protected, and the image of racing is protected. Because after all, management of the track has the greatest stake of all to making certain that everything is conducted on the highest possible plane. And it's a problem that we've had for years, and it's a problem that is never ending, and that we stay with day in and day out and night in and night out.
Well, have conditions improved, say, in the last 25 years?
Oh, I think they have. I think the communications things have improved considerably. Now we also have closed-circuit TV and cameras placed around the facilities, which enable us to actually do a better job of watching what's going on within it. Testing devices have improved considerably for the testing of horses. And as you know from your days on the Illinois Racing Board, Bob, every winner of a race is tested. The blood tests and other various other testing devices to make certain that that horse has not been stimulated or depressed, for that matter. And that continues on, and the various testing means have been improved. There are experiments going on all the time trying to upgrade the quality of the tests and to make sure that some chemist doesn't come up with something new that you can't detect. And not everybody in this world is honest, believe it or not.
Well, You hear so much about butazolidone. What came before butazolidone?
Well, I think bute was bute. You know, is something that many people don't understand. They get the idea that it is a stimulant. Bute is not a stimulant. Bute really is an analgesic. Bute will not make an animal race any faster than he is capable of racing. What it does is it removes the soreness and stiffness. As one trainer put it, he says, you know, a human uses liniment to get over a soreness, and with horses, they use bute to get over that soreness. So the claim there is that it enables an animal to race to his potential, and that is true. A bute will not make a horse go any faster. Prior to that, I guess you'd do things like, I don't know, I recall being told about how they would stand in ice to get to generate a numbness. They were permitted to use bute, but under the old rules, you could not give any sort of medication to a horse within 72 hours of a race. There has been a tendency in the last few years to have what they call permissive medication, and several states have permitted it. Illinois is one of them. California did. Kentucky, Florida, where they permitted them to actually give the horses butazolidone to relieve the pain and the soreness right up to 24 hours before a race. Now, the question that chemists and vets argue about is, what effect does that have? Should it be given to them up until 24 hours before a race, 48 hours, 72 hours, or never? They used bute prior to the popularity or becoming known. And it was used for training, and it still is used for training in horses that do not have permissive medication. But it's like taking aspirin. You can take an aspirin up until 48 hours before you perform, and that's what it amounts to. I mean, that's an oversimplification, yeah. Bob, but that's basically what it is.
Well, bute now, when it's given, is given under supervision, right?
Oh, yes. Any medication that's given to an animal must be given by a veterinarian licensed by the state, and it must be reported to the state veterinarian. Those vets report every single bit of medication that a horse gets, and the state veterinarian that works for the racing board has a complete record of everything that that animal has received. And then, of course, if he wins the race and he's tested and something comes up other than what's permitted, or he's in trouble. Yep. I mean, he can be barred for life, and I think you know that the last two or three cases the Illinois Racing Board has had, they've barred people for 25 years, and I think that's fine. I think the penalties being stiffer have said, okay, just don't play around, because if you get cute, you're going to be out.
Yes. I was going to ask you, and I suddenly realized, I was going to ask you, what about the caliber of championship horses? Let's say the horses that run for the Triple Crown, like Aladar and Affirmed and Spectacular Bid and these kind of horses. I wonder if they ever need something like bute. But it suddenly occurred to me, there was a Kentucky Derby changed around a few years ago. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. And that was I think probably what focused the attention on the use of butazolidone in the training of horses, and then and should it be used or should it not be used. And I think it also focused attention on a thing which the chemists and the vets have since developed further, and that is the time of retention of bute. And it varies between various animals. Some animals may retain something for 48 hours, some for 24, some for 5 or 6 days, and I think that's what happened in that case. I would say an awful lot of horses, they use bute for training just like you would use a liniment with any athlete.
Yeah.
But then they don't use it, of course, for racing, and it eases the soreness. I think they discovered that some horses retain it much longer than others, and I think that was the case in that particular one.
Sid Anton, you're concerned with harness racing, which is a very, very popular sport and seems to be getting more popular every year. The other type of racing, you hear about Affirmed, Aladar, Seattle Slew, all these great horses. You don't hear as many standouts in harness racing. Why is that?
Well, I think the thoroughbreds have been way ahead of the standardbred people, the harness people, for years in the names of horses and the development of their champions. I think the Kentucky Derby, the Belmont, when you start getting these large races and national coverage of them, I think it draws attention to a much greater degree to one or two standout horses, where in harness racing we have not had that national coverage and that national exposure. So as a result, we don't have the champions that at least that are as well known. We have one right now, Rambling Willie, who has won over $1.5 million, more than any other harness horse, and I think probably now is about fourth or fifth in standing all time for any sort of a horse. And he's still going strong. He raced at Maywood a couple times this year. He'll be racing at Sportsman's Park, Monday, tomorrow, when they open. He's so good it's getting difficult to find horses to race against him.
Do you remember the great Greyhound?
Oh, yeah.
You saw him?
No, I didn't. I didn't have the good fortune of seeing him. But, of course, I've heard a great deal about him, read a great deal about him. But there again, that was a standout horse. I think Rambling Willie is as much a standout as Greyhound was.
Well, you know, Colonel Baker treated Greyhound like Greyhound was a member of the family.
Well, I don't recall exactly how much money Greyhound earned. But whatever it was in those days, it was worth a heck of a lot more than it is today.
You know, the special home he built for Greyhound after he retired.
Yeah.
I mean, all air-conditioned, all just absolutely beautiful. And once a year at the start of the harness season, they used to bring him out and trot him around once so that everybody could see him. He was really great.
Oh, he was a standout, an outstanding horse. And, of course, this is what you're getting with Rambling Willie. Rambling Willie has a... Bob Farrington's got a nice spot put away for him right down here south of Chicago and down in Ohio, wherever he's going to, one or the other. I think he's got a summer home in Ohio and a winter home in Chicago, or the other way around.
Well, he's a great horse, no doubt about it. Our guest today, we're delighted to have him, a prominent figure in harness racing, Sid Anton of Maywood Park. And we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Our guest today is Sid Anton of Maywood Park, one of the beautiful harness racing tracks in America, and really a delightful place to spend an evening. The racing is great. The food is good. The environment is just very, very nice. Sid, what about the history? What about the background of harness racing as we know it today? Where did it all get started?
Well, of course, started back several hundred years ago, but as we know it today, I think you can go back to the early 40s with the invention of the mobile starting gate, and then right after the Second World War, it started to develop at that point. It made racing, the start of racing, that is the starting of a race, much easier with the mobile gate, and I think that's when it started to develop.
I wondered last, a week ago Saturday at the Preakness, and now next Saturday the Belmont. When they spring those gate and those championship horses swing, it's a wonder it doesn't scare some of them.
Well, of course, they're trained that way. They get used to it, and they're trained for the gate just as we train harness horses to race behind a starting gate. Some horses get right up there and nuzzle the gate and want to chew on the metal on the screening, and other horses, they get hit in the nose with it, and they jump up in the air. So it's all a question of training, and I think... I look at those starting gates with the thoroughbreds in them, and that when that gate springs open, I think it would make me jump. But of course, they're trained for it.
Bell rings, too, doesn't it?
Yes, and I think probably it'd be a conditioned response, so to speak. When the bell rings and the thing springs open, they know that's the time to go. And they're trained in that manner. It's the same thing, for instance, in harness racing. When they're warming horses up and training them, they usually will go in the opposite direction on the track, and they'll just jog along. And the horse knows when he turns the other way, he's expected to go faster. They're just trained for it.
Uh-huh. Do they have harness racing in practically all countries in the world?
Oh, yes. Europe has quite a bit of it, but in Europe they do not permit pacers. Only trotters are allowed to race in Europe. They have in Sweden and Italy, Germany, France, Russia, all of the countries over there have it. As a matter of fact, I'm hoping I'd someday get a trotter good enough that they'd invite me to go over to a couple of those races in Copenhagen.
Well, when you say that they allow pacers and they don't allow trotters?
No. They allow trotters only and not pacers.
Why?
Well, trotting is a natural gait, and pacing really is an artificial gait because both legs on the same side move forward simultaneously in pacing, and they're the ones where they wear the hopples, the stuff which helps them maintain that stride.
Well, when a horse who is destined to become a part of harness racing is born, are they born with one gait or the other?
Oh yes, you breed it. You breed them. In other words, pacers will breed pacers, and trotters will breed trotters. I happen to have a mare. It's a trotting mare, and I only have her bred to trotting sires. And each of the foal that I've had, each of my colts have all been trotters. So by bloodlines, there seems to be a tendency to maintain one gait over the other. One of the problems here in the United States is, of course, that we have very few trotters. Probably less than 15% of them are trotters now. And a big part of it is that the Europeans have come over and bought them up. Every time you get a good one, they come over and buy them and take them over to Europe. Now, this four-year-old colt that I've got won a couple races this year. Well, he won more than a couple, but...
What's his name?
Arnie's Victory, and he got pretty good, and I've had four or five different offers, one from Germany, two of them from Italy, and one out of Sweden, wanting to buy the trotter. But they want him right now, and I said no. I've gone all these years without a really top horse, and if I happen to be fortunate enough to get one, I want to race him this year. I'll sell him this fall after we're through racing. But they want to take them over there for breeding purposes. And this is what happens, unfortunately, with all the top horses. The money comes along, and they grab them, and they set them over there and use them for breeding, and so we don't have them here.
How much money has Arnie's Victory won for you?
Oh, he's around $40,000 so far this year, but he, if knock on wood, if he stays sound and goes well, he can win a couple $100,000 without too much trouble.
You know, you're talking about harness racing in England. Now, we know automobiles, they drive on the wrong side of the street. What about racing over there? Do they run it like we do?
I haven't been over there, but I know the only time that I've seen some of that racing in other countries, I was in India, in Calcutta, some years ago, and they raced going in the other direction. There was, as far as we're concerned, the wrong way on the track. Instead of... They went clockwise instead of counterclockwise, and it just seemed kind of funny to me, but probably more so today. I wasn't as used to racing then.
Well, you wonder why that is, that there aren't more accidents. You take Americans that go to London for a week or two and rent a car. Now, somebody keeps them really getting clobbered.
I've had the experience of driving on the, I still say, the wrong side of the road. When I was in India and Burma and China, when I was in the service, you get used to it, and pretty soon it's just a condition thing. And after two or three days, while you just get in the habit of staying over on the left side of the road instead of the right, I've always felt it was kind of goofy. But then we're not used to it. They probably think we're goofy the way we do things.
Well, now what happens now? You've just had a great meeting at Maywood, and now your meeting is ended, right?
Yes, it is. We had a super meet, Bob. It's the best we've ever had in Maywood's history, and we average around $1,200,000 a night. The horses will be going to Sportsman's Park and racing there for most of the summer. In fact, up until September, the latter part of September. We have a lot of work to do. We're putting in a new hub rail, a regular high thoroughbred type rail. We're resurfacing our entire track, building our banks up, trying to get it fast, because with use, a track has a tendency to flatten out, and then we start to lose some of the speed that's designed into it, so you have to rework it occasionally. And we have a great deal of sprucing up, cosmetics. We will have the new tote machines in when we open this fall. And when you do that, that's a big project. Why, we figure that's a good time for us to go in and rearrange the interior of our building.
Does that mean an entire change in your computing system?
Basically, yes. It's a whole new system, and that system, all the old equipment will come out, all the old wiring comes out. It's a completely new setup, and it's a fantastic thing. As I say, they have it at Arlington now and at Sportsman's, and they have tellers. In other words, you can do everything at one window. You don't have to go to two windows. You know, why not think of the convenience of the patron, and that's what finally brought these machines about. They've been probably 6 or 7 years in development. Harness Tracks of America pressed American Totalizator Corporation years ago into developing this new equipment, and fortunately it's worked out quite well for all concerned.
Well, it is. A person maybe can stay for 4 or 5 races, and they want to bet all the other races on the card. They can do it all at one window.
Well, you can do anything you want at the one window. You can bet anything from $2 on up. There's no set amount. There's no longer a $2, $5, $10 window. There's no longer a cashier and a seller. You go to that one window, and that one machine does everything for you. It even cashes tickets. The cashier no longer has to figure out how much is a ticket worth. They merely put the ticket into the machine, and it reads, and there's a digital readout for the patron to see and for the cashier to see or the teller to see, and it tells you exactly what the ticket is worth. You don't have to try and figure it out, and it doesn't make any difference if it was a ticket from a week ago or anything else. You don't have a problem of stragglers and the cashier saying, gee, I got to look this up in the old records. It just is a great deal more convenient for all parties concerned. And you eliminate long lines, and I think it makes it a lot more convenient for everyone.
I had a chat to visit with our mutual friend Phil Georgiev yesterday on the phone, and he also made a radio show for me. He has a feeling that the Belmont's going to be a lot closer than people think it is.
I don't know. I mean, I think Spectacular Bid's fantastic. I don't. The two races that I've watched him race in, I don't see how anything can come anywhere near him.
No, but he seems to be going faster all the time.
Oh, yeah. He's getting older. He's growing, and I think he's getting better. And, you know, there's always someone trying to beat a champion, and I think they're going to have a tough time doing it with Spectacular Bid.
Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is one of the prominent figures in harness racing, our good friend Sint Anton of Maywood Park. And we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Sid, as you know, in championship racing, like next week, the big Belmont, there's the horse and the jockey. In your sport, harness racing, there's the cart, the driver, and the horse. That's three things instead of two. How do you measure the importance of the horse versus the driver and the cart? Is he 75%? Is he 80% in the event of a winning race?
Well, I don't consider it three things. Just as you have a saddle on a horse, you could say that's a third thing. Basically, you have the horse and you have the driver, or you have the horse and you have the jockey. Now, I think in thoroughbred racing, where the horse is carrying the jockey on his back, and so there is a weight there, and, of course, that's the idea of weighing of the weights on a horse, that do affect the speed because he's carrying a great deal more. There were considerable tests conducted in the harness racing industry where they created drag on the wheels of the bike and added weights and everything, and they found that it has little or no effect. As a matter of fact, that the only time that there was any effect whatever was in the days of the old clay tracks that were soft. If you had a heavier driver on, he had a tendency to cause a little greater drag than with the lighter ones. But in reality, it's just like you can push a 4,000 or 5,000-pound automobile. You sure as heck couldn't pick it up. And the same thing exists with a horse. Pulling the cart does not create a drag for him.
Well, they say in championship racing, let's say today or next week at Arlington Park, the horses will have different weights. How do you do that in harness racing?
We don't do it in harness racing. The weight is no factor, whatever. I think you find that if anything in harness racing, more on a mile track, the horse probably plays a more important role because you don't have the turns to go around. And on a half mile track or 5/8, the driver's ability probably comes into play greater because of the maneuvers and the moves that he makes to get into the proper position in a race. You know, a lot of it isn't just getting a horse to go all out by himself, any more than it is with thoroughbreds. It probably is more pronounced in harness racing because of the carts and everything. They're further apart, and the moves that a jockey makes, and you're seeing that on these television shows, to get into the right position to be able to win is very important, and that's what a jockey does. It's the way he rides. The driver does the same thing in harness racing.
Sid, we've enjoyed ever so much having you as a guest today. Congratulations on your great meeting out at Maywood Park. I know now you'll spend a lot of money getting all set for the next one, and it is a big investment, isn't it?
Yes, it is, very much so, and we enjoy it, and we enjoy having the people out, and I enjoy talking to you on the show. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Sid Anton, one of the prominent figures in harness racing, our guest. Try to get out and see the Cubs today. They wind up their series with the Giants, and it should be very, very important. The Giants have all of a sudden, after getting off to a great start, are not playing good ball. And let's hope the Cubs can keep it going. Anyway, have a happy Sunday. And now this is Bob Elson saying goodbye until next Sunday at our usual time.